This meeting is now being recorded.
Okay. Thank you. This is Michelle. Well, welcome, everyone. Good morning, good afternoon, and good evening. And welcome to the new GTLD Subsequent Procedures Working Group Subteam Track 2 Legal Regulatory Call on the 7th of December, 2017. In the interest of time today, there will be no roll call. Attendance will be taken via the Adobe Connect room. As a reminder to all participants, if you could please state your name before speaking for recording purposes, and please keep your phones and microphones on mute when not speaking to avoid any background noise. With this, you may begin.
Hi, everyone. This is Sophia Fan. I'm the co-chair for the Walk Track 2. Thank you for joining today's call. And as usual, I would like to first ask, do anybody have an SO updates that should be shared with the work group? And then please raise your hand on the web, on the chat. I don't see any hands raised. So then we just move to the agenda as a schedule. So today we're going to talk about the contract compliance and TLD rollout, the topics in these work tracks. And then first, we are in the slide two. And so just the outlines of the schedules for the next few calls. To remind you, our next call will be in December 21st. And the goal is to move forward with all the deliberations proposals, so step forwards for the initial call or initial report. And the next slides, as we recap on the discussions on contract compliance, and where we're at the moment. Just 1 second. We had one previous call on the contract compliance where we addressed the final issue reports identifying no specific concerns. And out of the previous public comments about the preliminary issue report, some concerns were raised by the groups around the applicant representations in their applications, the reliance the community can place on those representations, and how those representations can ultimately integrate it into registry agreement. And we discussed that we need to define the scope of what we can address in a policy in relation to this topic and the in what areas of the PDP that we can address that. And it was decided to look for further feedbacks and in situ comments to bring this forward. To address that, we have discussed that the scope must be limited to the area where we can offer recommendations on data collecting and contractual requirements registry in order to better serve the roles and results of these contract compliance topic. And additional feedback was to sold in the CC2 comments. So the goal is to use the CC2 feedback to better address the scopes and issues highlighted, as well as potentially translating those representations in contract requirements and data analysis. So first, I would like to read out some takeaways and issues that was raised in our previous May 25th call for the people that only in audio. And then we can deliberate further on the issues and how we can address the following. So the compliance turned to, there were some comments on says the compliance turned to operate as a black box, and some recommendation to enhance the transparency about UGTLD that will be helpful. And some in public comments also raised issues in regards to predatory pricing of registry. An opinion was raised that it was outside of rules of contract compliance if it's not explicit in the registry agreement. And Also, their question asks, are there any areas we can ask ICON compliance for data to better understand the duty of compliance and offer recommendations for the improvement? And after this group discussions, it was suggested that we reach out to the compliance to ask them what data would help them better fulfill their roles. And the suggested approach for policy development in this area was to ask ICON for what data they collect from registry in order to enforce the contracts and make recommendations. So I want to pause for a few minutes before we review the CC2 comments. I think there are the takeaways and how we address the we ask for compliance for data for Pacific Analytics. What group have any recommendations or comments on the approach that we take after the May 25th call? I have not seen any hands raised. So I guess we can bring this, wait a second. Okay, we can move to the CC2 comments and then discuss that. As reviewing the CC2 is our second pass through this topic. And the goal is to review the feedback provided and discuss with the group whether it is falling to the scope of discussions and how we can address that. And or maybe there's more questions that need to be asked regarding the comments. So there's only one question on the contract compliance, the question 2.8.1. And it says, noting that the roles of contract compliance is to enforce the registry agreement and any changes to that role are beyond scope of this PDP. The workgroup is not anticipating policy development related to this topic. The workgroup expects that any new contractual requirements will be made enforceable by inclusion in the base agreement. Do you agree with this approach? And the comments that received for these questions, majority agreed that with this approach to anticipate any new contractual requirements included in the base agreement. However, there are some additional comments. For example, made by the RISG and BRG affiliates, says any compliance-related requirements are to be made enforceable by inclusion and for registry established during subsequent procedure, an updated base agreement will be advisable. And there are also additional comments that will need to be discussed more extensively here. Additional comments made by INTAC address that INTAC and its members have long called for greater transparency for contract compliance with both the needs for more granular and meaningful data on the activity of the department and the nature of the complaints deal with. And better communication with complainants about the steps taken in response to complaints reported to the department. There have been a number of troubling operation practices engaged by registry operator during the first new GTLD round. These practices include arbitrary and abusive pricing for premium domains targeting trademarks, use of reserve name to circumvent Sunrise, and operating launch programs that differ materially from what was approved by ICON. These troubling practices seem to violate the spirit, if not the letter, of various contractual obligation in ERA and must be addressed by the PDP working group in order that they are clearly and specifically prohibited in subsequent procedures. So with this comment, I would like to ask the group, whether the INTAC comments on the issues we're discussing about abusive pricing and the misuse of reserve name it's falling into the scope of contract compliance topic. If it is falling into the scope, how we can address that? Anybody want to comment on this? Okay, I see Alan. Yeah, Alan.
Thank you. I find it, on one level, I agree that, predatory pricing is bad. On the other hand, I don't know to what extent that's within our domain to even attempt to control. The only thing that strikes me might be within our domain, and I wouldn't know how to phrase it, is to require that in their description of their business plan of how they plan to run the registry, if there is some sort of unusual pricing that they're foreseeing, that they document it. But as much as I may personally want to see control over that, I don't really see how it's within ICANN's remit, given that we are encouraging innovative business models, or we say we are. But maybe I'm missing something.
Thank you, Alan. I think that's reasonable considerations on this topic, because I think the mechanism is ICANN do have the RPM mechanism to enforce the protections of the registrants and public interest. However, there is always slight conflicts or there was always interest conflicts and whether the registry wants to be innovative and sell more domains and then to, how we can address the protections. So I saw Michael is raising the hands here. Michael, you go ahead. Hello, Michael. Michael's saying in chat, can anybody hear me?
No.
Okay. So we will delve back to
this. Can you hear me now?
Yes, we can.
Yes? Yes.
I just have to shout real.
All right. Go ahead.
Hold on just one moment. Let me make one quick. My microphone. How's this? This better?
Yeah, much better.
All right. So in response to what Alan is saying, and not saying that we should explore the aspect of predatory pricing, but if we were to, one of the things that we can do is we can make recommendations, and we can't necessarily ask that contractual compliance go and address this area if there isn't an area within the contract that allows for them to check it. But we can make recommendations, perhaps to add something within the contract in another area of the PDP, or we can ask if we were to explore that route, we would need to obviously get more input from the working track as a whole just to explore that area. Just saying, figuratively, if we were to explore it. So we do have some, not necessarily mechanism, but some area, some path forward to explore that if need be. Just want to make sure that's clear for everyone.
Thank you, Michael. So do we agree that that we should drop some recommendations on this and seeking for more inputs from the work group? Okay, we see Alan, your hand is up. Please go ahead.
Yeah, thank you. I have no problem with that, but I'd like to hear some examples of what it is that we could say. I mean, I feel I'm wandering into a net neutrality discussion here, if any of you are from the U.S., you know, where we have to treat everyone equally. And I'm not sure we have any such concept within our rules. So I'd be delighted if I could hear an example which makes some sense, something that is within our scope. Thank you.
Thank you, Alan. And we have Christina Rosette. Christina, please go ahead.
Thank you, Christina Rosette, Amazon Registry. I think perhaps I'm confused, and if so, that's my own fault for not being as good about catching up on past meetings. But it would seem to me that before we take any effort to draft any recommendations, why wouldn't we first confirm that these allegations are in fact correct? I mean, the comment seems to be alleging that registry operators are engaging in certain practices. Wouldn't we first, and maybe this is what we're talking about and I'm misunderstanding, but wouldn't we, if this is something that we thought might be something that we wanted to approach, wouldn't we first contact contract compliance and say, have you gotten complaints on any of these issues? Have you conducted any investigations? Can the outcomes of those be shared with us? It just seems to me that and to be clear, I'm not raising the question because of who the commenter is or what they're commenting about, but it just seems to me that it would not be entirely responsible for us to be making recommendations without actually having any data.
So, Christine, to quickly respond to what you have to say, my comment was basically saying that we have the ability to kind of make those recommendations, but we also have to outline the path forward for how we would approach that. And before we were that, I was trying to say that if we have interest in that area and we have the ability to do so, then we do need to make forward and reach out to those individuals and ask overall if this is the area we want to explore. And as you say, we do need to have that data. And one of the our previous takeaways was to make sure that we reach out to compliance for that certain data that we can actually base further recommendations on to see if there is a need actually for us to make recommendations. I hope that clears up your question.
Yeah, thank you, Michael, and thank you, Christina. And I think then the compliance, we will consider compliance the request some further facts before then we decide whether there is a need to address this and ask for more comments. Okay. So I think there is another comments.
It's Alan. Could I get one more comment in, please?
Sure. Sure, Alan, go ahead.
Yeah. It strikes me that of the list they have in this comment, there are several different categories. Arbitrary and abusive pricing of premium domains, I don't think there is anything within our rules that even talks about that. So if there are enough, if I'm correct, then it's not a compliance issue. So that's one category. Clearly, if they have violated the rules in the approved rules for Sunrise, and that they've done things which are not what we approve, what was in the contract, that could be a compliance issue. And the last one of troubling practices seem to violate the spirit, if not the letter, of the contractual compliance obligations. I don't believe contractual compliance is in the business of asking people to honor the spirit, not the letter of the contracts. If they take compliance action, it has to be for clear violation of a clause, not because it followed the rules, but it wasn't what we meant when we wrote the rules. I think that's outside of it. So I think we have three distinct categories here, and we need to make sure that when we're looking at them, compliance can clearly give us information on things that are true violations of the contract. Things that are not violations of the contract, I think, are somewhat out of scope for compliance to even give us statistics on. Thank you.
Thank you, Alan.
Alan, responding to that. Oh. Sophia, do you want to respond to that?
No, go ahead. It's okay.
Okay, and I was just going to say to Alan, yes, it may likely be out of scope, but as Justine in the chat, I think it would be at least worthwhile to ask compliance if they have received this type of complaints, regardless if they've defined it's out of scope or not. And when asking them, they'll be able to offer us clearer details as to the limitations of what they're able to do in response to that. Even if they haven't taken any steps to remedy such complaints, we would be able to get some level of statistics in regards to that, I think. So that will tell us clearly if there is perhaps a problem, and then we'll be able to deliberate further based upon that.
Okay, thank you, Michael. And also, I think that we mentioned, I want to discuss with Michael, and that we mentioned that we also will reach out to the RPM group to see if there are anything that we can address together with them. Michael, it was the understanding of me. Correct me if I'm wrong.
Yes, I think this is an area that we would need to reach out to the RPM. We have liaisons with this working group that can connect us to that. Just to ask the question, because I do remember that there was some discussion in the RPM group, maybe at an earlier stage, but we might have members that are also participating in that who might be able to offer clearer details of whether or not the RPM group has explored that, and if it is worth us connecting to or not.
Great. I saw Karen's hands up. Karen, please go ahead. Hello? Karen? Sorry, I saw Karen, please go ahead.
Sorry, it took me a while to get off mute. This is Karen Day, for the record. I just wanted to say, with regard to data about this, I'm not sure if your work track has looked at this. I've not, memory is not that good with you regards to work track 2, but the circumstances described in this comment from INTA mirror very closely the one PIC DRP that was filed. And we've looked at that in Work Track 3. PIC DRPs are in Work Track 3 in terms of the process of the PIC DRP, but not the substance of that particular complaint. But there may be some data in that complaint, in that case, that is relevant to this discussion here. Just wanted to point that out. Thanks.
Thank you, Karen. And then we probably can coordinate to see what is the we can utilize those materials and resources and to address this for World Track 3. Okay, Michael says, I think it would be worth to hold off on asking RPM Group its resource if we need it. Yeah, agree. I saw Krista's hands up. Please go ahead, Krista.
Hi, can you hear me?
Yes, perfectly.
Oh, thanks. It's Krista for the record. I really have to agree with Alan's comment on separating out the three areas or the four areas there. And just I think one of the aspects that are really pointed out is the premium pricing of trademark names. And that was an issue from before, and I'm going to guess it's tying into the agreement and making sure that trademark owners are properly protected. And having registries premium price those names is at the heart of the issue. So I'm not sure if that helps or not, but by separating it out, I think it would be probably really helpful. And I'm sure there is quite a bit of data on that as well. So thank you.
Thanks a lot for the advices. Then we will go back and to see if how can separate these three areas and ask the right data to the right group. And Steve, your hands up.
Thanks, Sophia. This is Steve Chandler. Thanks. This is Steve Chan from staff. If we seek data from compliance, I was wondering if it might be worth considering whether or not, so even if there is evidence or is there not, there is not evidence of these practices taking place, that wouldn't seem to preclude this work track discussing whether or not they think it should be restricted or not. So, you know, even in the absence of data, the work track could still consider and look at these things that could take place and determine whether or not they think that these things should be restricted from a contractual standpoint. If that makes sense. Thanks.
Yeah, okay. So what I think that we come to an agreement that's just seeking the data from compliance and then discussing how we and based on the outcome we define and decide how to go forward. So for the sake of time, we need to discuss the other comments that was made by Jenny Skoll. If we are in the slide 9, so it was Jenny suggest that specific 13 TLDs and exemption of code of conduct TLD with only NICTA brand, that means one domain name registered, should not have to go through annual audits of compliance with specific specification 13. ICON should be able to check for themselves that a TM is still in the TMCH and also to check the brand is not in the primary business of domain names. I want to ask the group that do you think this is a problem here of you know what the comments is describing, and is there issue there? And so the first question to the group, and then how if there's an issue, then how we address that. And Michael, go ahead.
Sorry, just to add a little a little punch on this. Just so everyone is aware, in regards to the requirements of the specification 13. So Janik is noting that ICANN can go on the TMCH to check if the TM or not. The specification 13 only requires a 1-year registration of a trademark a one-year Sunrise registration in the Trademark Clearinghouse. So whether or not that's a requirement for ICANN, for the audit compliance, just to say that one-year registration has already been fulfilled or if it's continuing to be registered, it wouldn't necessarily, for example, ICANN going in and looking for themselves may or may not be able to address that in regards. Other aspects best to consider is there are other areas within the audit compliant within the audit certificate that's brand required to submit. So if they want ICANN to go in and look at that data for themselves and audit it, is something to consider. I think that there were a few brands out there that did not want ICANN to go in and audit them directly, and rather the certificate was a better idea for many of them. So as Sophia said, we would love to have more feedback in regards to this.
I don't see anybody want to make comments here. So, anybody, do you need more background information in order to have more discussions? Okay. Michael said we can come back to it, and then. Just let us know if any comments maybe up to the call. You can send in any comments to the emails or your questions about these comments. Also welcome. Then we for the TLD rollout, that's the next topic. We are in slide 5 for information. So to recap, we were at in the for the TLD rollout. The issue report was noted that the work group may want to collect some data input to determine the degrees of concern related to the delegation timeline requirements. And we include the questions in the CC2. We'll review the response later on. So the goal of this discussion is for the work group is to explore and decide whether a change is needed. Then it may choose to adjust implementation guidelines or develop new policy language if necessary. So through our last discussions on this topic, there were several questions raised, and then we requested some data related to the delegation timeline, request extensions, reason for requesting extensions and TLD termination statistics, etc. from ICANN, in order to have informed discussions. And so there is some data request on the slides 11. So we request the delegation extension after signing the registry agreement and then the number of the accepted and number of denied, exceeded delegation deadlines without requesting extensions, the number for that extended and terminated TLD. And we got some data from ICANN that shows ICANN received approximately 45 requested for extensions and granted over 30 extensions to that 12-month delegation deadline. And it was out of the over 1,200 contracting new GTLDs. So in general, the GDD team worked with the registry operator to find a path towards delegation within or as close to the 12 months as practicable. Approximately 15 GTLDs had their registry agreement terminated prior to the delegation for lack of demonstrated progress. All of them were brands. So there was mutual consent that registry operator are not going to move to delegations and for those terminations. And the slide, we are in slide 12. So the primary reasons for request extensions are categorized to four. First reason is change of RSP prior to the delegation. Second, assignment of TLD to another RO prior to delegations, often including three, change of RSP as well. And third is the registry operator challenges with partnering with data escrow agents, which is the requirement to pass the pre-delegation test. And the fourth is the internal turnover in a new registry operator, or lack of internal consensus that the firm wants the TLD. So that was the data that provided by ICOM, as we wanted to prerequisite to how we decided and for people to bring this discussion further and please take into the considerations. And for the CC2 questions, there was only one question as well, 2.71. It asked the applicant guidebook specify timelines by which applicants had to complete the contracting within 9 months and complete the delegation within 12 months. However, this requirement only means that the contract needs to be executed and the NIGDA-TLD be delegated. So the question is, are these time frames reasonable? Is there still a need for these requirements? And please explain. And in slide 14, and to summarize the comments that we received for these questions, majority states that these are reasonable. But there are also some addition comments. For example, Nominate says that we will also agree that there should be some long stop date by which contract execution and first delegation are to take place. And John Paul says the all GTLD are supposed to be for the benefits of registrants, global internet community, not registry operator, and others within ICOM. The registry operator that fails to timely operate registry should be terminated. That is quite a strong comment. And then the third one, like OSD and BRG, also addressed that the requirements are reasonable to avoid speculative applications. We believe that the extension provided and criteria applied by ICOM in evaluating those extensions has been reasonable and continue to serve the intended purposes. So the speculative application, it's also related to this, the question of to avoid the speculation applications here. Then there are some other additional inputs for these topics provided by affiliates. Says the requirement to begin escrowing data for only a TLD, NIGDA TLD size seems premature. And Johnny Skull says once evaluating TLD, applicants should be guaranteed contract delegations. In other words, contentions that clarify in question within a certain time frame. And BC also states that the applicants and ICOM both need to adhere to the specific timelines. During the last application round, ICOM often took weeks and even months to respond or acknowledgement of application and inquiries. When they did a response, applicants were provided with a short response due date, otherwise the issue will be closed, resulting in a very one-sided process. So to summarize some of the comments here, I think it's emphasized the not the one-sided processes. There is some concerns on the ICOM's delegation time, the processes there. And also there is another, there's also concerns, also, there's also suggesting that whether, you know, we should look at whether the delegation for to only use the NIC.tld requirement is reasonable. So I would like to ask the group here, maybe Michael can add some substance into this. But I would like to ask the group to seek for your comments, to say in the comments we receive right now, do you see it's a problem here, how should we address that?
Thanks, Sophia. Just Michael here. I think your summary is good. There's a number of parties, the BC, JANIC, and Nominet as well, that note kind of lack of response from ICANN and that deadlines for ICANN to make sure to move forward with those delegations. There were quite a number of blocks in the path of the contracting and delegations, such as name collision, specification 13 being finalized for brand applicants, quite a number of them. That might get into some of the other work tracks as well, but in terms of the 12-month and the 9-month, it seems to be rather reasonable. But within, I think that perhaps a policy, a proposal on this, or perhaps a consensus on this, might want to touch on the aspect of ICANN also falling in line with those deadlines. But that's also falling into predictability a little bit. So if anyone does have any comments in this area, it would be greatly appreciated. Otherwise, we might just go forward with the kind of the tone of the CC2 comments here.
Thank you, Michael. So, yeah, should there be any recommendations that I can sort of adhere to the timelines? So anybody have any comments on this? Agree? Not agreed? Okay, I see. Cheryl is typing. Since people don't have any issues actually there, seems like the group okay. So Cheryl says, as we are aiming for predictability, I would think that we should ensure timeliness. So I think we can come back to this when you have more comments and feedbacks on these comments. I think we can summarize what was discussed today and send to you after the call, so you can continue providing your input afterwards. So, Michael, I saw your hands up. Please go ahead.
Yes. Just a note on upcoming calls. We looked at the timeline in the beginning, but we will be moving forward with writing out the summaries and proposals that we want to pose to the full working group, deliberating on these in our upcoming calls. So the tone of today's call, for example, without any comments, that we'll probably just summarize based upon what's here in the C2 comments and the feedback, the details back from this compliance, what it is. And then we'll share that in the upcoming calls, the end of December and mainly January, what those proposals are. We'll deliberate them on them, get feedback, rewrite them, and then come back in February and have a perhaps a consensus call. Well, We'll have a final call for any objections to those proposals, and once we have that, we'll submit the final form to the full working group in March. So just so everyone knows and is prepared, we will try to send those out as early as possible for people to, for everyone to review. That's all from me, and Sophia, I think we might be able to leave 10 minutes early today.
Yeah, great. Thank you, Michael, and that's what we're going to do. And I think today we have 10 minutes earlier in the call. Thank you, everybody, for joining us today. And wish you a nice morning, evening, and there. Thank you. Bye-bye.
All right. Thank you. This meeting, again, has been adjourned. Have a great remainder of your day, everyone.